Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Thursday, June the 17th, 2021, and this hour is one of my favorite hours of the month. We do this every third Thursday from 9:10 a.m. until 10 a.m., and with 4th of July and summer just around the corner, it's hard to believe we are still in spring here for a few more days, but with the 4th of July and fairs and summer just around the corner, it's a perfect time to visit with my pal. She's been a radio host, she's been a columnist, she is a best-selling author, and she is the undisputed queen of helpful hints, the legendary Heloise. Heloise, how are you?
Well, it is so lovely to hear your voice. I would like to record that intro so when I am not feeling well and I have to do a radio show, can I play it first to perk me up?
Well, you can not only have it, that is not written down at all. That's not one of those prepped intros.
Oh, really?
No, that's right off the top of my head.
Well, you're fabulous. And that shows you how far saying something positive or nice to someone who may be in a blue mood, or maybe something bad has happened, or they're just kind of, you know, not having a great day, how something simple and positive can lift their spirits.
You know, I have been on a pilgrimage for that exact thing. Because,
really?
Oh yes, because I feel that people love to say the negative things about people, and people love to talk about that.
Yeah.
But we so rarely ever say good things.
Well, part of it is, it depends on who you're talking to. If you're in front of a group, and you're there as a speaker, or you're with your friends having lunch or something, you know, that's friends and lunch and dinner, and that's kind of private. But if you're in public and you're offering speech or some information or something, that's a little different. I don't know whether you've ever sat next to my girlfriends, my college and high school girlfriends. God, we still get together occasionally. Used to go the third. We would do the third Saturday of every month. Once we graduated from college and people got married and started having kids, getting together for lunch was difficult to plan. So finally, Miss Math Major me, I said, okay, let's do this. Let's pick first Saturday, second Saturday, third Saturday, whatever you want, and it'll always be that Saturday. And when we did that, it made it easier on all, because you're like, are we doing lunch to, was it last Saturday? It was like the third Saturday. And it got to be part of our routine. The husbands even knew, oh, guys, the third Saturday, the girls are going to lunch. But it became a positive thing in our lives. And we've known each other since high school and college and through marriages and divorce and losing children and losing parents and dear friends. But that one ritual helped keep us sane, knowing that no matter how bad things got, we knew we were going to have that. She's going to lunch with the girls, you know. And everyone needs to have some positive, some happy like that. Some little, it can be as simple as stopping at a coffee shop you've never stopped at, having dinner someplace you've never gone to, or maybe you go to the museum that you haven't been to the museum where you live in ages. Pretend you're a guest in your own city and ask yourself, what have you not done?
Well, this is true, and I think this is why, now they say they do, people in general, but if you really question them on it, they have a hard time answering the question, what is your purpose? Because if you have a purpose, even in dark moments, you will be able to get through.
Yes. And I would kind of possibly paraphrase it, you know, what is your purpose? What do you do that makes you happy? Or what do you do that you like? Do you like helping your family and neighbors? Or do you like, you know, taking care of animals or lost pets or something like that? Something that gives you a you know, my grandmother used to say, and she was a tough old bird, let me tell you, Florence McCullough Cruz, the first female child born in Rosebud, Texas, in 18-something or other. And she didn't have a great life. She lost one husband. They weren't wealthy. And she met my grandfather. And they had, gosh, 5 or 6 kids, you know. And she always, and I always used to love to visit her. My father was Air Force. So I didn't get to see her the way the other cousins did. I maybe only saw her once every 2 or 3 years. And she would say, my nickname is Ponzi. And she would say, now my little Ponzi is coming here. And you be sure that I have on my lipstick and my perfume. And the woman that would come in and take care of her would get her lipstick and her perfume. And another friend, and Florence McCullough Cruz, knew what was going on in the city, and she was always engaged in civic activities. So the other friend would cut out important things like that. They were going on in the city, something they were going to vote on, and she would bring them to Florence once a week. And Florence would take a safety pin, and she would put them in order on the curtains next to her bed, and she would circle the date, and she'd look at it, and the caretaker would come in, and she'd say, okay, what did the city council say? And it gave her a purpose. It gave her something to do that she was interested in. And you know that they would call her, because she had a snap mind, occasionally, the city council, and they'd say, now, Miss Cruz, she'd say, yes, and they'd say, we're going back over records, and when they voted on something in, you know, 40 years ago, she said, yes, that was so-and-so, and they used her, and she felt she had a purpose.
Well, that's true, and it's funny, and this is a whole nother topic for a whole nother time, but, you know, when it comes to what we call senior citizens, but the age, the time frame people are living is getting so much longer.
No, you're right.
That we really do underuse these people, and it's almost taboo in society if you bring somebody with a lot of knowledge in to do something that maybe a younger person could do. People think, well, why are you using that old person? Yeah, it's a weird attitude.
Well, part of it is in the job place work situation. If you've got a job and then somebody comes in to help out who maybe knows more than you do, they may be older, you feel a little vulnerable. If they could couch it a little bit differently and possibly say, oh, this is, you know, Fred Smith, and he used to work here 10 years ago, but he knows about something or other that they did 15 years ago when they put it together, then people will say, oh, really? Because we don't know about that. So you need to find a hook, as I call it, you know, something to connect those two things, those two people or the two ideas or the projects together, and then people seeing like, oh, that's a great idea. We never thought about that.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I know there are other countries and cultures that treat older people a completely different way than we do here.
Yes, yes. I lived in Hawaii, 58 through 62. My father was Air Force and was there when it became a state. And my parents had lived in China and Japan after World War II. And Hawaii has a great ethnicity, and they do revere elders. They revere them because they have experience. They have the knowledge. There was a case, Daddy was Air Force, stationed at Hickam Air Force Base. This was after the war. But yet, when we moved there in 1958, I think they were taking me to the dentist or the hospital or something. And some of the buildings were like two stories, and you walked up the outside stairs. You know, they were still kind of rebuilding. And we came down the stairs, and I looked at the corner of the building, and there were like pieces of the cement were missing. Well, I didn't know anything about World War II. And I said, Daddy, what is that? And he stopped, and my father, Air Force pilot, 6'2", 200 pounds, he stopped, and I thought, oh, no, what have I said? I could just see the look on his face. And then he stopped, and he said, now, Ponce, where we are right now, this is where, when Hawaii got attacked, the planes came over, and that's some of the bullet holes that are still there. And I didn't understand it. I didn't until I learned about it. So many countries revere the elders because they have had those experiences. They have been there. And maybe they can impart something to say, but you know what? We're neighbors now, and we're friends, and we buy and drive their cars.
Well, it's very interesting because as we are about to head into summer, and a lot of people and a lot of families will be getting together for picnics and cookouts mm-hmm. and things of that nature. You know, I like to people watch, even within my own group. And one of the things that I have found most fascinating over the years is that when the original parents, or when only sometimes maybe one of them is left, when they get in their late 70s and 80s and even into their 90s now, and they go to these events, you have their kids, who are at this point in their 50s and 60s,
yeah.
And then you have their grandkids, which sometimes are in their 30s and 40s at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have great-grandkids at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, I don't know if it's because their kids have now become grandparents, but the original group, that over 75 crowd, kind of gets treated like babies again. And I always think, you know, I wish I could have been there when they were wiping these kids, these grandparents' noses.
Yeah. It depends a lot on how they treat their elders, how they take care of them. And the bottom line is, and a lot of it can be generational, but the bottom line is, regardless who the person is, how old or young they are, what ethnicity, they deserve respect. And it doesn't matter who they are, you can always find a common thread. It may be hard sometimes, because remember, I used to do a lot of speaking engagements, and afterwards, we have lunch, and then after that, there would be a Q&A, and then I'd go, usually with the president of the group and selected women, and go have coffee afterwards. And I would watch how the conversation went and who led it. And it was usually someone who'd been there a while say, well, you know, so-and-so years ago we had Miss So-and-so as a speaker, and she talked about plants, and we really learned a lot. And then the woman next to her would say, oh, that's right. I remember learning about whatever plant it was. And then the conversation would flow around, and it gives everybody an opportunity to participate.
Now, when we actually get to these holidays this year, or these summer outings and summer cookouts and so on and so forth, there's a new trend that's out there that I don't know about. But I haven't seen it yet. But mustard on a watermelon.
I know about this. All right, now, do you know about putting salt on a watermelon?
Well, I've seen that, yes.
Yeah, and why do people do that?
I think they like salt.
No, they say the watermelon is too sweet.
Oh, is that the reason?
That's what I used to hear.
Oh, see,
I would say it's a little too sweet, so if I put salt on it, it cuts the sweet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and I'm like, okay, now mustard on a watermelon. I don't know, it depends on the kind of mustard.
No, see, I think that this is a slippery slope.
Yeah, but it's, you know, if the mustard is some regular yellow mustard, or the, I don't know, I'll have to try it.
Now, do you really want to, are you a mustard person?
I love mustard. Yeah.
Now, see, I'm not a huge mustard person.
I don't know, there's so many, do yourself. Step out of your comfort zone, okay, Scott? And the next time you go to the store, go buy a mustard you have not bought before.
Well, I will say that the sweeter mustards are okay. Like the Grey Poupon?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. No, you just see all the commercials.
I just like the commercials.
Yeah.
I don't understand why we're putting mustard on a watermelon.
It may be that's the taste they like. It may change the taste a little bit. Some of the Dijon mustards might have a little bite, you know. I'll give it a try.
Now, do you think this is something, if you're having a family get-together, that you should offer? You know, if you have watermelon there, you should say, hey, I have some mustard if you really want to make that good.
Mm-hmm. If someone came to my home, of course, they know me. They know if they're coming here for dinner or a barbecue or something, like, oh, God, what is she going to make us try now? Because if you walk into this household, and I'm testing a hint, you know, you're part of the group. But I think it's to offer. Someone may have a food allergy. Someone may not like whatever you're serving, but to offer and say, would you like to try some? And then it gives the person the option of saying, well, thank you, but not right now. Or, yes, I'll try it, and they may like it, they may not.
Well, maybe I'll try a taste test here on the program some morning.
There you go.
Yeah, but I don't want to be involved. Because I just, there are certain, I'm not even really a salt person.
Come on, now look, step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, but the last thing people want to hear at this time of the morning is me choking.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. But I don't know. I think that there are just certain things. But I also feel this way about ketchup. You know, people who put ketchup on their macaroni and cheese, I don't get that.
They do that?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I put ketchup on, now, I don't even know if this is an oddity, is scrambled eggs. Now, I have done
that. It's, I don't know whether it's a southern thing. I can remember when I was a young child and we would come visit, you know, our relatives here in Texas, and Mother would put a ketchup bottle on the table, and I'm like, Mother, we're having breakfast. Are we having hot dogs? And she said, no, it's for the eggs. And I was like, what? And one of my cousins said, he started doing it. Now, we're all from Texas, so we like Mexican food or Tex food, things that might be a little more spicy. And he said when he was in the service, he was a Marine, he said wherever he was stationed, is like, they would just serve eggs. And they didn't have any salsa. You know, they didn't have any hot sauce. And he said he started putting ketchup on it because it gave it a little kick, a little spice. So give it a try. You may like it.
Absolutely. Now, before we get to the actual 4th of July picnics and holidays and all that, there is some serious news going on in Washington, D.C. right now. I saw a little a bit on it yesterday. Actually, yesterday was the first time I had seen this. But Juneteenth, there is talk of this possibly becoming a federal holiday. Now, for people who don't know, Juneteenth is considered to be June 19th, and it would be recognized as a federal holiday as the end of slavery.
Now, wait, is it the end of slavery, or is it the date that the Emancipation Proclamation was done, or that I can't remember if it was that was the day it was signed. It has something to do with that date. I'm not sure which, whether it's the sign, maybe it was when it was signed.
You know, that's a good question, because okay, let's see here. We'll look. Why is June 19th considered the end of slavery? President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation of 1862 had officially outlawed slavery in Texas and the other states that had rebelled against the Union almost 2.5 years earlier. So it might have been the date it was signed and that
probably so.
Considered the end of slavery, I guess.
Yeah.
But it should be a federal holiday.
Well, I think it should. I think it would be very, very nice. And it's a good, you know, history can be very hard for us to learn. And history can be very enlightening, and you learn good things, but we need to know the bad things that went on before too. So I'm glad to hear that.
Well, it's just to clarify here, it was not the date the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, but it was the day the last black slaves in the Confederacy were liberated by Union forces in Galveston, Texas.
I didn't know that.
That's interesting.
Galveston, I'll be darned.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
So that's why it would be considered the end of slavery, and that would be a federal holiday. And I don't know if this would carry the weight of like a Thanksgiving and a Christmas Day that everything would be closed. I'm guessing, though, it would be very close to that.
You know what? If it's a federal holiday, you know what? I know they're listening. I'm going to have my staff look it up, because when it's a federal holiday, I think it's a holiday, but certain things like convenience stores and grocery stores and hospitals and all of that, they stay open, but let's see what we find out about that.
Like a President's Day, I would imagine.
I think you're right. More like a President's Day.
More like a President's Day. Now, on to the 4th of July, which is also a federal holiday.
Yes.
There's another one we have. This is a big one. This is just a few weeks away here.
Yeah.
What do we do? We have people dress their pets up. It's a big thing. What? Red, white, and blue.
Oh, we have, I live in San Antonio, Texas. I've said it all the time, but they have a pooch parade. And I can't remember whether it's July 4th. I think it's July 4th. And anybody who wants to bring their dog, now the dog has to be in a harness or on a leash or in a car, or in the back of the truck with people, and well-behaved. And they dress these dogs up with the hats and the little mittens, and they've got scarves around their neck, and it is the cutest thing. And the dogs are all just happy as can be. And it's a nice way to celebrate. But they also, and here's what is before that, they inform people who want to be in the parade, if they're bringing their pooch, you know, that you have to be careful if you're the dog. You have to show all the vaccinations. You have to bring your own water bowl and water, and the dog has to be leash or harness. But along the way, and a lot of it goes through certain residential areas, and people will sit out on their front yards and with their little chairs and the whole thing, and they will put out water bowls for the dogs to come over. So the dog takes a left, and the person with the leash comes over, and the dog is lapping up the water, and they're talking to people, and they go on. And it's a nice way to celebrate, but it's also a community thing, too.
Well, it's interesting because I know somebody who has two little dogs. And, oh, actually, one of the dogs is named Houston, so there's a Texas connection. And, you know, sometimes these dogs get dressed up for the holidays, and, you know, they don't seem to mind it. The little dogs don't seem to care.
I've worked with, in San Antonio, the Animal Defense League, and many other pet organizations, and I've Texas A&M here in Texas has a phenomenal veterinary program. And one of our, we had three miniature schnauzers, and one of them, it was Savion, had a very unusual, I think it was a blood disease. I can't remember what it was. It was something not normal. It was like 2% out of 100. And our vet, Dr. Tom Weiss, he said, you're going to take her to A&M. And I was like, the dog's going to college? And he said, no, they have a very good veterinary program there. And he said, I know the vet. Her name was Dr. Kenita Rogers. And people said, you're taking your dog to A&M? I said, she would do it for me. We went up there. We stayed in a motel for a couple nights. They had her. We would go visit her every day. They would let us visit. And they found out she had, we had three miniature schnauzers, but she had, it was a really unusual, I can't remember what it was, but it was something highly unusual. It was like only 2% of schnauzers are prone to certain things. You know, Labrador Retrievers. And it was only 2%. And they found out what it was, and she lived another 2 to 3 years in a good life. And so God bless those vets.
Absolutely, and I think these dogs bring people a lot of joy, and they say people who have pets live longer.
I don't know if I'd want a house full of, like, 4 cats and 5 dogs, or, snakes, but it's companionship. The Animal Defense League here, and one of the other groups I worked with, Delta Society, and they would bring the owner and the dog, and they had cats that had been through training. They had been through training, and they would go visit nursing homes. And I was visiting my father. I didn't know this. And I was visiting my father one time, and I hear all this kind of commotion and barking, and I'm like, this is a nursing home. And I opened the door, and there were 3 or 4 on their little harness and their leash, and they'd go into the room, and you'd hear talk and this and that. A couple of the residents were in their wheelchairs out in the hallway, and the dog would come up to them. And it became, they knew the person knew the dog, and the whole place. And it gave the residents something to look forward to, something happy. And one of the owners later, I said, how did you get, I didn't know you all did this. And she said, my father was in a nursing home, and I was visiting him. And somebody, they had agreed that they could bring their own dog in that was well-behaved, you know, had the vaccinations and everything. And she said, I saw how everyone in the whole wing perked up, came out into the hallway, and that's why we started doing that. So when my father was in the nursing home, I spoke to the management, and I said, look, I work with Delta Society. I can bring you all the information. You could talk to all the vets and the whole thing. And, of course, they came back and they said, bring us the documentation. We would be delighted. They made a huge event out of it. Whatever time we were going to be, like 10 o'clock, everybody drives up in their cars and their trucks, and they've got the dogs with the little scarves around their neck and that kind of thing. all the residents were out in the hallway. There was not, and some of these people, and one of them, and I had gone back, and one of them, there was another group, and I'm not going to try and cry, I'm trying not to cry here, but there was another group, and it was young people, teenagers, and people in their 20s that had either been in car wrecks or had a physical something that they either couldn't talk well, they couldn't communicate. It was really, and I went to visit somebody, and I talked to and I said, "Can we bring the dogs?" And she said, "Let me talk to management." And it came back, you know, as long as they're well behaved, and we have all the rabies shots, and the owner is there. And we took our little miniature schnauzer, and there was, and we at that time we had a golden retriever that adopted us, named JD, short for this golden retriever is outside of my gate, and I'm doing some work, and big dog, I mean grown, and I'm like, "You go home, you belong to somebody." 5 minutes later, I was doing some yard work, the dog is there. I'm like, "You go home, you belong, beautiful. Full grown, not dirty, not sick of bruise." Well, it started to get dark, and I thought, "Oh gosh, if I just go in the house and leave him out there, and I wake up in the morning and he's gone or dead or something." So I said those fatal words, "You can come in for one night." And about, he came in. And he stayed out on the back porch, okay, that kind of thing. And then my husband was not here. And we had the miniature schnauzer. And she would jump off the bed, and she had a doggy door. And in the morning, I had my coffee, and I heard the doggy door flip-flap. I thought, okay, you know, Zinfandel's outside. And then I heard it kind of open. You can hear it because it has magnets on it. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I had my coffee. And I turned around, and I looked, and I could see the head and front paws of this golden retriever in the kitchen, and the back end out on the patio. So I said, "He's ours," and he just made everyone, and so I would take him to where, and I, the management, again, the whole thing, where my father was staying, and two of the nursing supervisors, and they had everybody knew, and we took JD, the golden retriever, and then the miniature schnauzer, and we had another dog, too, so we took three of them, or maybe somebody else brought their dog, and there was a young man, maybe in his 25, 30, and he was in a wheelchair, a high-back wheelchair, and he kind of responded, but not much, and we each had a dog, and our dogs had been trained, and they, you know, had all the vaccinations, and we showed all that. JD went over to this young man, 25, maybe 30, who was in a high-back wheelchair and had his arms on his legs, and JD went over and put his head on this young boy's leg, and the boy lifted his hand and petted the dog. And I'm going to cry here, but when we were all done and getting ready to leave, the director of nursing came over and said, "That is the first emotion or response we have seen from that young man in 3 months." Hmm. "We, and any time you want to bring your dogs here, you let us know." And when I talked to our vet at the time, Dr. Tom Weiss, and I said, "Tom, you know," he said, "there are a lot of groups, you know, that will do that. They'll bring animals in, you know, cats that are the right, they've got, you know, they're the right temperament." We used to have a parrot, actually a military macaw. We had two of them, and a blue and gold Max that was real sweet. And he said they would bring different, and he said, "We will get, it's amazing that maybe the patient hasn't really responded to any stimulus, doesn't really want to talk to anybody or anything." He said, "But the animal brings out this other part. And we will then find that we have something to talk to the patient about. And, you know, oh, so the golden retriever put his head on your leg? And they'd say, yes, I used to have a dog like that, or something or other. And so we started doing it about once a month, and some of other groups did. So you never know the power of something, a simple gesture, can really lift someone's spirits and hopefully make their life a little better.
You know, it's a very touching story, because I think that we don't think sometimes how little things that we might not give a whole lot of thought to at the time mean so much to other people. I often think about people just in general in wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. The things that we take for granted we can do by being able to walk, that for them are big things every day.
It's so powerful. And again, if you've never experienced it, you've never been in a wheelchair, you've never had a broken leg or something, you've never had to deal with that. Well, I did. I was out of college, and I had a motorcycle. I still have it, a Kawasaki 175, silver and black. I took a safety course, thank you very much, and I was a very safe rider, and luckily I was getting ready to make a turn. Anyway, this car hit me, and I spun around, and I remembered part of the safety course, you know, and your instinct is to, like, put your feet down and stop. It's like, no, let the motion go, as long as you're not going to hit another car or something. But your instinct, and I put my leg down, and I ended up with a fractured femur below the knee and down to the ankle, but I did stop. And I really lucked out that the orthopedic surgeon that happened to be on call that time, his name was Jack Henry, and he was the orthopod to the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Oilers. I lucked out. So I'm laying there on the table, and I had to call my father. Oh, gosh. He had to take me to the hospital. That was a whole other story. But the doc walks in, big guy too, like 6'4". And he, you know, the lights that go over the table that kind of go up and down? And he hit his head on that light, and he said, God darn short surgeons! I thought, uh-oh. And he looked at me, he looked at the x-rays, and my father was outside, thankfully, and he looked at me and he said, what are you doing on a motorcycle? And I said, I took a safety course, and I said, it wasn't my fault. He said, okay, he really was good. He said, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you. If you do what I tell you, you will be fine. If you don't do it, you'll be seeing me again, and I'm going to be putting 3 screws in your leg. And I'm like, okay, and I did everything he said, and I'm fine now. But it was just this wake-up call. And so as someone personally, do me a favor, you know, watch out for bikers many times. And it was the driver, he didn't see me, and that's what happened. But the funny ending of the story is, okay, I'd never had, I was on crutches for, God, I think 3 months. Because it was from below the knee all the way down. And so I was on crutches, and we'd go have lunch, the girls and everything, and we went to one of our favorite restaurants, and I went to the ladies' room, and I kind of managed pretty good. I was in there for a long time, and the ladies' stalls, you know, there's the toilet, and some of them are so, that like, your shoulder almost hits the side, on either side. I couldn't get out. And the door opens in, which is a safety thing. And I couldn't get the door open because the door would open in. It would hit the commode. I couldn't get out. It was really funny. And finally, about 5 minutes later, one of the waitresses came in. She goes, "Are you all right?" I said, "I can't get out." And I looked at her. I said, "You know what? These doors really should open out." And I called City of San Antonio to, I can't remember which, their whatever authority it is. But the doors open in because it's safer for the people who are standing outside. Have you ever been to a restroom and the door opens out and they open in for that reason? And I said, "Yeah, but the next time they think about it, you know, about somebody who's, anyway." But I learned a very good lesson. So, is that I check the doors, but also if you see someone who may be on a crutch or on a cane or in a wheelchair having a hard time, you very gently and nicely say, "Can I help you?" Because you never know, they may not be able to open that door. And it only takes a second, as long as you're pleasant. Most of the time people say, "Yes, I can't quite get the door open."
Well, Heloise, this is a big one this time of year, and I think about this a lot with older people and people who have physical ailments, as we've just spoken about. Mm-hmm. It's time to beat the heat. How do we do this?
Boy, and I live in San Antonio, Texas. Yeah, it's, you know, we're relatively used to it. We're in the South, but Texas, you know, sometimes if you think of where we are geographically, many times we'll get the breeze from the ocean, so you'll get some of that humidity, but then you get the heat. But other places where it's really dry heat also, you know, like Arizona and places like that. So you need to be aware and conscious of what is the weather going to be like when we go to the picnic for July 4th. Is it going to be bright and sunny and no clouds? That means we need sunscreen, maybe an umbrella or some kind of shading, you know. Or is it going to be humid? You know, when it's humid, you don't perspire. So you may not know you're getting overheated because you aren't perspiring. And important, too, if you're taking your pets, please remember, you know, their little pads are like your hand. So don't walk them on, you know, hot streets or roads or sidewalks. Be sure you have water for them. And in the San Antonio, again, the Pooch Parade, some of the people would bring their own water bowl and the water, and then other people in front of their yards would have these big water bowls, and it became a way to have a nice conversation, to communicate, and the dogs, of course, got all the attention.
Mm. Now, if you don't have air conditioning, what's the best way to stay cool?
Boy, it's a tough one. When my parents, they didn't have air conditioning. And when I was in college, I had audited. I didn't take it officially, but I could sit in whenever I wanted to. And one of them was an architectural class. And I was interested because having lived in the East, you have one thing. We lived in Hawaii, and we live here. And part of it was, depending on where you live, to build your home, or at least if you know it's going to be extremely hot and dry, right, then you want to be sure that the major walls of your house are facing in the opposite direction. Sun comes up in New York, and it sets in California. So if it comes up in New York, right, and then it goes over Texas, it's straight up, and then it takes a long time to go to California, well, then the west side of your home gets the most sun and heats up more than the other side. And if you use fresh air, opening windows, you know, opposite windows, so there's a breeze through the room, and ceiling fans, was one of the stats, because I was working with City Public Service here, and one of their statistics was that Now, not when it's 110 and humid, but, you know, on a very hot day, that with a ceiling fan, it will make you feel, because you've got that air kind of blowing over you, it'll make you feel, it was a couple of degrees cooler. And so those are things to consider if you're going on a picnic. Find a place with a big tree so you've got some shade. Be sure and, you know, maybe bring some shade. Maybe you're going out to a park or something like that. Be sure and bring some kind of umbrella stand or some shade that you can provide. And be sure also, it's easy to get overheated. You may not think about it. You think, well, I'm sweating, I'm perspiring, I'm okay. Well, you could still get very, very overheated. So it's better to drink more water than you think you should.
Absolutely. Heloise, the time goes by so fast. You have a wonderful 4th of July, and I can't wait to talk to you. Boy, it'll be late July. How about that?
I think we could do that. Tell everyone have a wonderful and safe 4th of July.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
The legendary Heloise. All right, that's it for me today. Glenn Coble coming up from 10 till noon, Swap Shop 12 to 1, and then we have Adam the Computer Guy 2 to 3. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better.
I guess...
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them.